Hi everyone! Before we dive into this week's episode, please check out our promo of the week.
I'm Paige, the host of Reverie True Crime. I tell stories of helpless victims, vicious killers, predators watching their prey before they strike, survivors, petty crimes, people we think we know who do the unthinkable, and the dangers that lurk not only in the dead of night, but in plain sight in the light of day. Every once in a while, I'll also tell stories of the frightening paranormal, elusive cryptids, haunted locations, and conspiracies that may be silly or thought-provoking. You can listen to Reverie True Crime wherever you're listening to this podcast. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at Reverie Crime Pod, Facebook, Instagram, and even Tumblr at Reverie True Crime. Remember, stay safe, be aware of your surroundings at all times, and take care.
Hi, I'm Laura.
And I'm Jill.
And this is Crime Divers.
Hello everybody, welcome to today's episode.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining us again for another episode. And as we like to do at the start of each episode, we like to highlight a missing person. So Jill, I believe you have one to do this week.
Yes, I do. I think this one's a little bit different.
Different? Who can it be different?
Yeah, I think she's been abducted.
Oh, okay.
There's a possible abduction.
Right,
so,
okay.
The lady's name is Betty Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's from Missouri. So I'm looking at two different missing posters. So one of them says that she was abducted from her house. Her locked door was forcefully broken.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's been reported that Betty has dementia, but she was not. Her family says no, she wasn't. She hasn't been diagnosed with dementia.
Right.
So she didn't wander off.
Uh-huh.
She has been abducted.
Okay.
So she was from Paris, Missouri. And she's been missing since the 16th of December, 2021. Betty is 88. She's 5'2". She weighs 86 pounds. She has grey hair and blue eyes. So I'm just going to read what it says on this missing poster.
Mm-hmm.
So Betty L. Hayes went missing from Paris, Missouri on December the 16th, 2021 at 9:30 p.m. Betty was last seen at 17040 Route C Holiday MO on Thursday night. Betty's vehicles are still at her home address and she is not known to be travelling in any personal vehicle. Betty does not suffer from dementia. As I said, I've already said she's 88, she's 5'2", 86 pounds, grey hair and blue eyes. She was last known to be wearing a dark stocking hat and dark coat, possibly black.
Right.
But on her missing poster that I've seen that her family have put up,
mm-hmm.
it says that she was last seen wearing dark plum dress pants, a plaid blazer and a hat. And all of these items that are in her house, she was caught on a surveillance camera shopping,
right.
Grocery shopping.
Uh-huh.
That afternoon.
So they're saying that's the last time she was seen in public.
She was seen. She's obviously went home.
Mm-hmm.
And then she spoke to her daughter at 9:30 that night.
Right, okay. So that was the last contact.
So that's why they're saying she's missing from 9:30 that
right.
night. Her family believe that she didn't make it to bed
right,
that
okay.
night, that her house has been broken and
right.
somebody's taken her.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any information regarding Betty's disappearance or you know of her whereabouts, please call 911 immediately. Contact your nearest law enforcement agency or call the Monroe County, Missouri Sheriff's Department at 660-327-4060 or the Missouri State Highway Patrol Missing Persons Clearing House, that was a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
At 573-526-6178 or toll free at 866-362-6422. So I will put all that information in the show notes, and there's a $10,000 reward leading to the arrest and conviction of, you know, people or persons responsible. So yeah, I'll put the missing poster on social media, and if anybody has any information, or even if you can just share it, that would be fantastic.
Just sharing just raises the awareness, that's all we ask.
Thank you. So we would just like to take a minute to talk about Patreon. We do mention it every week, but we have had some listeners asking us to explain exactly what it is.
So Patreon is an exclusive platform for listeners to pay their favourite creators a monthly fee in exchange for bonus content, which includes ad-free episodes, early access to our weekly episodes, and two Patreon-only episodes a month. We have three tiers, the first one being only £1 a month, and that will give you ad-free episodes and early access to our weekly episodes. A lot of listeners sign up to this tier just for general support to their favourite podcast.
Yeah. So the second tier is £3 a month, and that will give you one bonus episode a month. Plus, obviously, you still get the benefits of the £1 tier as well. And lastly, we have a £5 tier, and that gives you two bonus episodes a month. And after 3 months, we'll send you just a wee gift to show you our appreciation. And you, obviously, you also get the benefits of the other tiers as well.
It only takes a couple of minutes to sign up. There's no contract and no minimum commitment. So if you would like to sign up, head on over to patreon.com/crimedivers. We hope to see you there.
Yep, that would be fantastic.
Brilliant.
Yep, so today is a Lorisode.
Yep, we have a Lorisode.
Yep, so where in the world are we?
We are in Australia.
Okay, we're going down under.
We are going down under today.
What's the name of your case?
It's called The Woman Behind the Mask.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Now, I'm going to give you a little trigger warning. It is quite horrific.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
Well, you know.
I mean, no true crime case really is pleasant.
You just took the words right out of my mouth.
But I found this one really quite horrific with the, well, basically what happens.
Can I go home?
You are home. So no, you can't.
Okay, you just want to dive in then?
Yeah, we'll just get diving into this one. So Dana Vullen was born into a tight-knit family with two older sisters and a twin brother. She and her family lived in the small community of Coolin Island off the coast of Western Australia during her early childhood. So the family then relocated to Perth when Dana was 6 years old. So Dana, she was described as a cheeky, confident kid. She'd built up a rich network of friends throughout her time at school. And on completing high school, Dana enrolled in a Bachelor of Communications, where she graduated with a major in advertising, as well as a Bachelor of Business majoring in management. So she did quite well.
Yeah.
So Dana, she described herself as outgoing, loud, assertive, fun. Some people would say she was wild. Her sister said that she was so kind and very generous with her time though, and she always wanted to help people out, and you know, she was always there if you needed her. So she was actually quite, you know,
sounds nice enough.
Yeah, just a bit of a wild girl, wanted to have a good time.
Same.
She always took great pride in her appearance. In her words, she said she looked immaculate all day, every day.
Okay, not same. says we sit here in my Harry Potter. Well,
I'm just about to tell you that she said that you would never catch her in trackies or joggers. Her outfits always had to be a little bit different, and she had to stand out from the crowd. She liked the way she looked a lot. The reason I'm emphasising it quite a bit is because you'll understand when I tell you actually what happens to her.
Okay.
So she got, you know, she had good looks, she got a lot of attention from men. She said that she was always getting hit on and it was just the norm for her. So she just was used to it. But, you know, it wasn't all about her looks. She did actually have brains as well. And after she graduated, she started working for her big sister, an office refurbishment company. Her sister had two young children, so she, you know, she was enjoying being an auntie and with the hope that one day she would have a family of her own. But at the moment, you know, she just wanted to have some fun. There were two sides to her, you know, a woman with a generous spirit, but also a wild child. And, you know, she even admitted that she did actually dabble in a bit of drugs here and there as well. So when she was 25, in 2011, she was at a New Year's Eve party at Perth's Crown Casino. So Dana spent part of the night chatting to a man called Edin Handanovic. He was a fitness instructor. He was of Macedonian descent. And they spoke for about half an hour. So Dana said that he didn't hit on her. He wasn't sleazy. And there was no, like, physical contact, you know, like kissing or anything like that. He just told Dana that he was divorced. But it turns out that he was actually lying. He wasn't divorced. He had only recently separated from his wife, Natalia. She was the mother of his child. And it turned out that Dana had, like, her and Dana had mutual friends. They'd even met once, so, you know, Dana had no reason to suspect that she would suddenly become Natalia's sworn enemy.
Ooh.
So Natalia was desperate to reconcile with Edin, and she discovered that he had been seen talking to Dana on this New Year, at this New Year's Eve's party. And apparently later, Dana and Edin, they'd met for a second time, but again, nothing had happened or anything like that. You know, there was no relationship or...
Were they just friends?
Well, I don't even think they were friends, to be honest. It doesn't sound like they were really that much. I mean, they just had this half-hour conversation at a party. I'm not sure what the second encounter was about, but it certainly wasn't anything romantically or anything like that. So Natalia, you know, she became enraged about this. She was not happy. So Dana had a phone call from Natalia on the 26th of January 2012, which was actually on Australia Day. And just so anybody, in case they don't know what Australia Day is, the official national day of Australia, it marks the 1788 landing of the first fleet at Sydney Cove. And in present day, Australia celebrations aim to reflect the diverse society and landscape of the nation and are marked by community and family events. They also have official community awards and citizenship, can't say that word, ceremonies welcoming new members of the Australian community.
Okay.
So it was just over 3 weeks since Dana had met Edin at the, you know, the New Year's Eve party. And Natalia had said on the phone call that her and Edin were together. And she started being abusive, calling Dana, quote, a fucking slut.
Lovely.
Quote, and that she was dead. She had no idea who she's made enemies with. She's, you know, basically, so sorry, them. Natalia was basically saying, Dana, you've got no idea who you've just made enemies with.
Alright, I was getting a bit confused there. I don't understand what
you meant. I know, I kind of didn't say that properly, yeah. And that Natalia, she said that she was going to kill her and ruin her pretty little face.
Oh.
So in the weeks that followed, Dana received loads more phone calls. And her friend, Luke Richards, said that he overheard some of the phone calls. And he said he heard them say, you know, we're watching you, you know, just really horrible things was overheard on this phone call. So I think Dana had, like, put it on, like, loudspeaker so that he could sort of hear what was going on. He was at Dana's place at the time and he witnessed about a dozen and threatening phone calls. And Dana put, say, some of them on loudspeaker so that he could hear them. Luke asked who it was. So Dana explained... and said Natalia thought she was sleeping with her husband, which she hadn't at all. Like, she hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
Like, nothing had happened at all.
So she's just, like, jumped to conclusions. Like,
oh, yeah.
Her husband has spoken to another girl,
mm-hmm.
and she's just put two and two together and came up with 100.
Yeah, exactly. She's just went, like, right off the rails here about it. And yeah. I mean, as I said, I mean, to me, it doesn't sound like anything. I mean, very often you can go to, like, a party or if you're on a night out and you can speak to men.
Yeah, you're not allowed to speak to members of the people... Members? What's the word?
Members of the public?
No, the opposite sex.
Well, yeah, it just seems that, you know, like, they obviously had a conversation, and as I said, I mean, there was nothing in it at all. It was just two people having a conversation. So Dana said that she just wanted to explain to Natalia that she hadn't done anything wrong. Edin hadn't even hit on her. Anything, like, he hadn't called Dana, or, you know, they hadn't seen each other. So... You know, she just wanted to sort of get that across to her that was the case. But as most friends would do, Luke you know, counselled her, and he told her, you know, not to stress about it, you know, nothing was going to happen, you know, don't get paranoid about it. And, he, you know, he tried to make her feel good about herself. So he was just being like a nice friend and trying to say, like, don't stress, you know, she's just obviously going off on one. I'm sure it'll die down.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, she's obviously just...
He wasn't thinking too much. He wasn't looking too much.
No, I mean, I certainly couldn't... I mean, what I'm about to tell you that happens, I mean, you could never have imagined that that would happen.
I've got a feeling it's going to escalate.
Yes, it is about to escalate, so I'm going to tell you now.
Okay.
Basically, what happens. So, 2 days later, after the phone calls when Luke was there, it was the 16th of February 2012, and it was just after 6 a.m, Dana was, sleeping in her ground floor apartment in Riverdale. So Natalia and a male accomplice, they were breaking in to her apartment. Oh, so she was actually on the ground floor, because this is a documentary that I've seen, and you actually see, like, because obviously, you know, Dana shows you, like, where they broke in. So basically they had to jump over sort of a wall, and then she's got, like, a sort of balcony. Mm-hmm. Outside an apartment, so they obviously climbed up the railings there. They got in through her back doors, because she had, like, back sort of patio doors on the balcony. So Natalia, she had been high on methamphetamine for most of the past 24 hours.
That can't be good.
No, exactly. So the lock on Dana's back door was broken, and, you know, Natalia and her male accomplice broke in. They woke Dana with a start and saw, you know, Dana woke up and she saw Natalia just standing over her.
Oh my God.
I mean, I would absolutely shit myself if that ever happened. Totally. Because you're just not expecting it, are you?
No.
You feel like you should be safe in your own home. So, I mean, that would just be totally, totally scary.
I hear noises in my house, and when I'm in bed, and I'm scared to open my eyes in case somebody's standing over me.
Well, no, I mean...
So to actually have somebody standing over you must be the most terrifying thing.
Oh, definitely.
Like...
Because, I mean, she lived on her own in this apartment. You know, it's not like she had anybody there with her. She was just on her own. So she woke up, as I said, she saw Natalia standing there, and she was like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you doing here? So Natalia was like, started running around and saying, asking, where is he? Where is he? And Dana's like, where's who? Like, who? And Natalia's like, well, where's Eden? And so Dana was like, what are you talking about?
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he's like, he's not here. Like, I don't know what you're on about. So Natalia must have been like totally off her face on drugs and just clearly thought that Eden was with Dana.
So let me get this straight. Eden has spoken to this girl,
Dana, yeah,
for half an hour at a party, and then they've had some sort of interaction later on, which I'm not sure what it is. Yeah, and this woman has decided to break into her apartment because she doesn't know where her husband is, and just assumes that that's where he is.
Exactly. It's
crazy, okay. Isn't it? Yeah. Okay.
I just don't get how you can go that far.
Yeah.
With that.
That's what I'm like. How do you get from there to there,
exactly, with not much of an evidence of anything really going on.
Yeah,
I don't think you should be breaking into anybody's apartment regardless of what the situation is, but certainly from what's happened, that doesn't warrant that at all.
At least have some evidence, some proof.
Exactly.
So, and still don't break into that person's apartment, but at least if you're going to accuse somebody of something, have the evidence to back it up.
Exactly. So, of course, Dana started to walk over to her front door to open it to tell him to get out. Mm. She was like,
is the guy in?
Yeah, so there's a guy in this apartment.
But did she know that?
Yeah, yeah, actually. She see the two of them. Yeah.
All right, I didn't know if it was just...
No, there's the guy. I don't know who the guy is, though.
Right.
There was no mention of what his name is. It's just her male accomplice.
Okay.
So Dana started to walk over to the front door to open it to tell him to get out. But Natalia then lit up and started to smoke crystal meth. So Dana says to Natalia, like, you know, get out.
Yeah.
Get out my apartment. So Natalia then grabbed the methylated spirits bottle, which is like a meth lamp. So it's obviously because she was like on the drugs, so she had all the equipment with
her.
So she grabbed it. Apparently this lamp has like a constant flame on it. And she started waving it about, saying, tell me where he is, I'm going to set you on fire. And Dana was like, what for? I was like, I don't know what I've done here. Like, what for? And without replying, Natalia twisted the lid off and doused Dana with the methylated spirit.
Oh, God.
So this is where it gets a bit...
Can I go home now?
Bad, yeah. So just a trigger warning for anybody. This is where it gets a bit...
Okay.
Awful. So Dana was then engulfed with flames.
Oh my goodness.
She cupped her hands on her face and just started screaming. The moment, you know, basically the moment she was on fire, she was screaming.
Oh.
Natalia and her accomplice, they laughed.
Oh my goodness. They like, just, how, like...
Yeah. Oh. They just laughed at her.
You would think... Sorry, I just interrupted you. You would think that... Was it's a horrific thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd think maybe once you saw that person in flames, that would kind of like give you a shock and like sort of
bring it to your senses.
Yeah, bring it to, and like, oh my god, oh shit, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get this under control. Like, we need to get her help. But to actually like laugh. Mm-hmm.
Yep, they laughed. They watched her burn.
Oh my god.
They laughed again and then they ran out of her apartment.
That's horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Awful. Dana said the pain was unbelievable. She ran into the kitchen to get water to pour over herself. She poured a bucket over her, but with a chemical burn, apparently you're just constantly on fire.
Yeah.
It just keeps on burning into your skin.
Oh, God.
I know. So she said that she remembers opening her front door and just screaming for help. Just like, you know, someone please help me. Because, I mean, luckily, you know, she's in an apartment block. So
yeah, so she's got people close by.
Yeah, so thankfully a neighbour was alerted and called for an ambulance. And another neighbour called Dennis Erickson rushed Dana back into her apartment and into her bathroom and put her under the shower. She was just sitting in the shower with the water on top of her and she was just screaming. Mm. I mean, screaming.
That must be excruciating.
Mm. She said that every drop just felt like it was acid burning into her skin.
Ugh.
She was just in so much pain. I mean, I can't even...
Can't even imagine.
I mean, you know what it's like just to burn yourself, like, you know, in a hot tap or whatever, just a tiny little bit. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Sober enough, never mind actually your whole body covered. So she said that, you know, Dennis was so nice and kind to her and he stayed very calm. You know,
How could you stay calm?
I know, I mean, he asked
like,
her
good, good for him. Like, I would be absolutely... I think I'd be absolutely hopeless in an emergency like that. Mm. I would be hopeless.
I mean...
I would be freaking out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I would react. But, I mean, you know, he's just stayed very calm. He asked her name. He told her everyone would be okay. And, you know, the help was coming.
Oh, good for
you
him.
Know, so at least she had somebody there with her. So amazingly, the hospital was actually literally a 4-minute drive from where Dana's home was. So, and apparently it was, it is also Australia's best burns unit.
Oh.
So even victims, I don't know if you remember the Bali bombing, it was treated there. It was a bombing, it must have been a few years before that. But anyway, so basically it was a very, very good burns.
Yeah.
In hospital. So I mean, she lived within 4 minutes of that. So thank God.
Yeah.
So... When doctors first saw Dana, they did not think that she would survive. Mm. She was immediately placed in an induced coma. Keeping her infection free was critical to keeping her alive. I have actually seen pictures of her, like,
mm-hmm.
after it. And I mean...
I don't want to look at pictures.
I'm going to have to
look at pictures, aren't I? Because I'm going to look the case up.
Yeah,
when I'm putting it on social media, I don't...
It's horrible. I mean, honestly, it's not nice to look at all. I mean, it is really, really, really is horrible.
I can't even imagine what it would be like to look at. It's
not good. So, you know, her family had no idea what was going on at this point. Her sister had tried to call her, and then while she was driving in her car, she actually heard a news report about a fire in Riverdale involving a woman with blonde hair. And she, because she was in the car with her husband and her two kids, and she was like, "What if that's Dana?" Because she, you know, blonde hair, she lives in Riverdale, she couldn't get a hold of her on the phone.
Yeah.
She was obviously starting to think, "Oh my God, what if that's her?" And her husband was like, "Oh, you know, don't be silly. Because of course she would.
Yeah.
You know, you're probably not thinking it's going to be, but she was...
It's one of these things that would, you know, you'd always be like, no, of course not. That's not going to happen to anybody we know.
Exactly. But of course... You know, her sister, she screamed, she was like, screamed at him to turn the car around so, you know, they could go and check.
Mm-hmm.
And when they arrived at Dana's apartment, there was just police and forensics everywhere. Dana's mum, Vera, she was actually on duty working as a nurse's assistant at the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister's name is called Svetlana. She rang her mum and broke the news to her. So she just literally ran down the stairs to intensive care. And she said she didn't even recognise her own child.
I was just going to say that. And she wouldn't have recognised her own child.
She actually almost said it was like looking at a Jesus on a cross, because obviously she was just like, for the picture that you see, she's just lying with her hands out, you know, like sort of
cross out. On a cross, yeah.
Yeah, and just like covered in like the bandages and stuff. And it's just, honestly, it's awful. It's heartbreaking to see that she's like that, especially, you know, I was saying to her, like, you know, she was such a pretty girl and, yeah, you know, she was really into her looks and stuff like that. And to have that happen to her, I mean, honestly. So they didn't actually really expect her to survive. I mean, you know, they really thought she would probably die.
Yeah.
So they, you know, they basically took it hour by hour to see if her body could keep fighting, which this went on for days. Like, they were just like, right, through the next hour.
Yeah.
Right, we've got through a couple of hours. They just really weren't expecting her to survive. I know that we've done a case before about, because it's one about somebody had been set on fire. Remember
the that was a Patreon one. That was, I think that was Jessica Chambers.
Was that what it was? Yeah, can I remember? So she didn't survive that, did she?
Yeah.
So I was quite shocked, to be honest.
Yeah.
So at first, you know, the police, they couldn't make sense of what happened, because obviously they knew nothing at this point. Like, they absolutely knew nothing of what happened. All they knew was that this girl was on fire, had been set on fire. They didn't know how it happened, what happened. So they actually asked Svetlana to make an appeal, you know, like on telly, to see if they could find out any information. So that appeal did eventually lead them to Natalia Demetroska, who we already know about.
Yeah.
Police began actually secretly recording her mobile phone calls, and many of them were to her husband, Eden. So in one call, she told Eden that she was going to dye her hair from blonde to brunette, because she was blonde originally.
Right.
But she dyed it to brunette. And one of the phone calls was from her mother saying that police were here and not to come home, which I was a bit conflicted about that, because I was like, if she knows that, her mum obviously knows that she's done something, but she's, I'm like,
yeah, but does she know what she's done though?
I don't actually know 100% if she knew at that point. But, I mean, the fact that she was telling her to stay away from home, she must have known she'd done something, I would say. Because why else? Because otherwise, the mum would be like, oh, the police are here, but I don't know why, you know.
But the mum might have just been like, the mum's not going to be thinking that her daughter's done something that, like, that. She probably just, like, she's maybe thinking, I don't know if she knew that she was into drugs and stuff, but she's maybe thinking, oh, it's just a drug-related thing or something.
Right. I just assumed that she was telling her not to come home because she knew what happened. I mean, I might be wrong,
Well, yeah, of course we don't know.
I mean, it doesn't state where if her mum didn't know, but I just assumed that maybe she did, and that's why she was telling her not to come home. And I was thinking, imagine, like, you know, that poor girl that's lying in her bed. And
yeah, but we don't know if the mum knew or not. No, so but if she did know, then that is absolutely horrific. You know, but
yeah
as we can't,
but I think her family must know, because next time it tells, like, eight days after the attack, Natalia was overheard telling her brother that she was on her way to Perth airport. It looked like she was fleeing the country, heading to Istanbul, then on to Macedonia. So Natalia, she actually had no, you know, she had no idea she was being pursued at this point. She had no idea the police were on her at all. She left her luggage and she headed straight towards the terminal where her flight. So basically, so she got to the airport. She dumped her car, and I actually think, I can't remember now, because I don't know if she maybe did get a letter or something, because she was running late for her flight, that's what it was, sorry. So she was obviously running late for her flight, so she was running that late that she just didn't even take her luggage with her.
All right.
So she'd obviously got, because she was on the phone to her brother, and her brother was like, you know, your flight's at this time or whatever, like, you need to hurry up. So she literally just dumped her car, didn't even pick her luggage, because I don't think she had time to go and check her luggage because the flight was, like, literally boarding. So, but obviously she had no idea that she was being pursued. So she headed straight towards the terminal where the flight was already boarding. And luckily, the police had managed to get to the airport just moments before her. So they were, like, lying in wait for her. So the police, you know, they actually arrested her as she was on her way to the check-in desk. So, you know, they got her, thankfully, before she managed to board this flight to Macedonia.
Right.
So 10 days after being set on fire, back to Dana, she woke from her coma. Dana actually said that she had quickly come to an acceptance that she was never going to be the same again. She said her skin won't ever be able to breathe again, and she can't ever sweat, which causes her to overheat constantly.
Ugh.
She's constantly itchy, but she can't scratch. And in her words, she said, the itch is a bitch. I like that. I mean, you know, considering
I can imagine the itch would be a bit.
Yeah. I just thought that was quite funny.
For somebody who like suffers from eczema, I know what itching is like, and itching is a bitch, but for that, that was just, I can't even imagine.
I know. She had to learn to walk and talk again, and it turned out that 64% of her body was burned. So she was at, because obviously in the documentary that I saw, she was wearing this like body mask. So I could describe it as kind of like a balaclava on her face.
Yeah.
So obviously there was just like a hole for her lips.
Yeah, I've seen
her
other
eyes.
Burn victims.
Yeah, she obviously had a whole like sort of bodysuit on her. And that documentary, like, you know, she was asked, you know, about if she would sort of take it off or what, like not if she take it off, but does she take it off basically? Mm. And she was like that she doesn't want to take it off. As she said that, you know, she was known for her looks and she's a bit embarrassed.
Aww.
And she's not completely used to the way that she looked yet, so she felt really ugly. So that's why she kind of wore it basically because she didn't want to scare people as well, you know, and just for herself because she just wasn't confident in herself.
Yeah.
She was somebody that was so confident in her looks and stuff that she was just like, no, I need to wear this.
What a shame.
I know, it's absolutely awful. I mean, you know, in the documentary, she was just so, she just came across as so amazing and brave, and I was like,
How?
Yeah. You know, after that, how could that trauma that you've been through and you were still, you know, sitting there and, you know, just try to get on with her life and stuff and try not to let it, you know, stop her from living her life. And I just thought, you know what, hats off to you. You just...
Good for her.
Yeah, totally.
That must be so hard to do.
It definitely does. So, Natalie Dimitroska, she was sentenced to 17 years behind bars. She will be eligible for parole in 2027, so in 6 years' time. But she was convicted of, which I thought...
5 years' time.
Sorry, 5 years' time. You're
2022 now.
Yeah, 5 years' time, jeez. But I thought this was awful. I mean, good, obviously, to be convicted, but what she was convicted of was grievously bodily harm with intent. So it wasn't even, like, attempted murder.
I was just going to say that. To me, that... I would have thought that would have been attempted murder.
Well, it seemed like attempted murder to me. I mean, I feel like, so that's why I was kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe she only got 17 years. Because I think she should have got a hell of a lot more for that. But then when I realised what the charge was, I mean, obviously, because actually, for that charge, it was actually the longest sentence in Australian history for grievously bodily harm with intent. That's the longest sentence. So, I mean, she did obviously get a really good sentence for that charge. But I just thought, God...
I wonder why she wasn't charged with attempted murder.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see anything to say why. But, I mean, Diana was at... Because, obviously, again, part of the documentary, her sister and the woman that's been interviewing on the documentary, they obviously must have all been in court that day because there's a bit in the documentary that shows them in, like, a taxi or something afterwards talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're over the moon. Like, they're really, really happy with the charge. I mean, Diana herself's, like, really happy about it. You know, her sister's sort of crying... a bit with sort of sad, happy tears, if you know what I mean. And they're obviously really chuffed with that sentence. But I guess, as I said, you know, for that charge, it's obviously really good. But I just thought maybe...
There must be reasons why it wasn't for... she didn't get attempted murder, but...
Yeah, exactly. So, that was a few years ago now. So I looked up some recent pics. And I have to say how amazing she actually looks now. You know, her body is still terribly scarred, but her face looks amazing now. Yeah, she honestly looks her beautiful looks, you know, her back. Not completely back to what she had pre being burned, but she actually looked really stunning for, you know, considering what her body had been through.
Yeah, I'm glad.
I mean, obviously her actual body, I mean, you know, the scars are just like there, you can't get away hiding from them, but with her face, I know, probably like a bit of makeup and stuff does well with hiding the scars and stuff like that, but you know, she just looks so, so good. And I think now she kind of advocates, you know, talking, you know, does talks and things about her, what she's been through, and I think she's maybe wrote a book as well about her experience and stuff like that. But I mean, I'm just amazed she survived, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, from the pictures that I saw and from hearing what actually happened, I mean, it's amazing that she's actually where she is today. Like, she just looks absolutely brilliant. And, you know, or like, she's got a nice blonde hair back and...
Oh, that's good.
You know, she just looks absolutely amazing. So, I mean, I just can't believe how anybody would want to ever do that to anybody. I mean, no matter what is going on in your life, and, you know, I know, like, you know, and relationships can get messy and...
But in this case, nothing was happening.
Well, exactly. I mean, nothing was happening. Like, nothing actually happened. There was nothing. There was no affair. There was no kissing or
There was just nothing there.
I mean, like I said, Eden wasn't even hitting on Dana at all. It was absolutely nothing. It was just two people having a chat at a New Year's Eve party that led to that.
That's actually really scary to think that you can't even... You have to be careful about who you're talking to. Because you don't know.
Well, exactly. I mean, because like I say, Dana was just innocently talking to this guy. Probably didn't even think anything of it after the conversation. Because, I mean,
being sociable. You're at a party. You're just... Exactly. You chat to people.
That's it. I mean, many times we've probably been at parties or out in pubs, clubs, whatever, in our younger days now. You know, I would talk to random strangers that...
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's just a conversation, an innocent conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I went home probably not... thought nothing of it
and never seen that person again, never thought of that person again,
but
or whatever.
I think Natalia obviously had some serious issues anyway. I mean, yeah. She, you know, obviously wasn't happy if they were sort of separated.
Yeah, I'm assuming that she had, that Eden was his name? I'm assuming that he has maybe given her reason to not trust him.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that he's hitting on every girl that he meets, and that doesn't mean to say that even if he is hitting on a girl, that girl... is responding to it. So
exactly,
the girl doesn't deserve... I mean, he wouldn't have deserved it either, but like, if you think that your husband is cheating, go and confront him about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not
exactly
the girl.
Go and sort it out with him. Like, yeah, you know, this innocent girl,
because you've got any evidence.
Yeah, exactly. This innocent girl has done absolutely nothing wrong, and I mean, I just can't believe how it escalated to that. I mean,
The drugs probably had a big...
Well, I mean, yeah, I think the drugs definitely had a big thing.
Big part in it.
But absolutely awful, and I mean...
Well, I'm glad that she's, you know...
Yeah.
That she's okay.
Yeah, she is. I mean, she's obviously going to probably... You know, I say her body's never going to be the same again. I mean, obviously, she's going to be probably scarred mentally from it as well.
I was going to say the mental side of it, that's a lot. That would be a
but
lot
I
to
think,
get through.
You know, looking at the pictures that I saw, she's obviously got to a point where she's probably feeling a lot better about herself just by her looks and stuff. But, you know, it's probably just a trauma that she's got to deal with every day of her life, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Okay. Oh, well, thanks for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you'd like to get in contact with us, our contact information will be in the show notes.
And hopefully you'll be back to join us next week for our next episode.
Yeah. So thank you very much, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.